Introduction. Situation. You are a student who has just left school and has applied to take part in a voluntary aid program for an organization called VWO. You are attending a briefing session about the program before being interviewed. The session is divided into two parts. In the first part, you'll hear details of the aid program, and in the second part, there'll be a question and answer session. You need to take careful notes on both parts in order to prepare yourself for the interview. Part 1. In this part, you'll hear details of the aid program. You'll now have 5 minutes to familiarize yourself with the note headings for Part 1 before the briefing session begins. At the end of Part 1, you'll have 5 minutes to tidy up your answers. The session is about to begin. Remember that you will only hear the recording once.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Jack Hobbs, and I'm the school's coordinator for VWO. VWO, as you already know, is the Voluntary Work Overseas Program. In the briefing this evening, we will describe the work this organization does in other countries. This work, as you will find out, is quite varied. We also want to answer any questions you have about our work. We have a previous volunteer, Kevin Chung, to help us in the second half of the session. My colleague, Miss Grace Jones, will be helping me with the briefing. She's a team leader on various projects overseas. She also interviews prospective volunteers.
Good evening, everyone.
Perhaps I could start by saying something about the objectives of VWO. VWO was set up to provide help in needy areas of the world, such as Africa, Nepal, and India. The volunteers are students who are 18 and above.
Yes, this point is important. We restrict it to those students who are over 18 because anyone younger finds it difficult to live in third world countries.
So, what type of projects is VWO involved in, Miss Jones?
In any country, the types of projects we're involved in are to do with either education or health. In the first type, the educational projects, volunteers will do things like work as helpers in schools or in poorer areas, actually help to build the schools.
Tell us about the local schools. What are they like?
Well, in remote areas, a volunteer team may find itself in what we call a bush school. A bush school can often be just local children sitting in the village square.
And what problems do they have there?
Well, for the teachers, there are often no blackboards or chalk to write with, which obviously makes things very difficult. And the students usually don't have pens or textbooks to study.
That sounds very basic. Now, what about the second type of project? What can you tell us about that?
Well, our health education projects are very comprehensive.
Can you explain what exactly volunteers find themselves doing on such projects?
Well, For example, they build clinics if the area doesn't already have one. And once the clinics are up and running, they help vaccinate babies. And they also do clerical work, such as filing medical records.
How do you go about building the clinics?
Well, there are two main considerations, or things we have to think about when building a clinic. One thing is the involvement of the local people. We need local people to be involved so that they'll accept the clinic as part of their community.
That sounds like a very sensible idea.
Something else we have to bear in mind is that we also need to train the locals in basic health principles. We do this because when we leave, they need to run the clinic themselves. We usually find that once the clinic is finished, the local people feel a stronger sense of ownership than if we'd just built it for them.
Okay. Now, you have many budding volunteers here who may or may not be successful in finding a place on one of the projects. What qualities do you look for in a volunteer?
Oh, quite a combination, really. There are some very obvious things we look for, such as being self-sufficient. This is because volunteers often have to make their own decisions. They're on their own. We also need people who are practical, with a lot of common sense. The main reason for this is that they have to find simple and quick solutions to problems. And we look for volunteers with a sense of humour. This is very important, as it'll help ease tension, particularly in situations where there are misunderstandings. But there's one thing they need which is much harder to define. I call it presence, or strength of character. They need this so that they can convey a sense of authority.
That's quite a few qualities, I must say. Now, how do you decide whether or not a potential volunteer will be selected?
It's a typical step-by-step process, actually. Once we receive an application, we have to do a first cut. And so, at this point, some people are rejected, but not many. Usually, this is because they're not available when we want them. We try not to reject many people, as we feel everyone can benefit from this kind of program. As an organization, we then need to match the projects we have on hand with the applicants. Following that, we invite them for an interview. It's possible that at this stage some people are not successful. We may decide that they can't cope with the climate or don't have the right attitude for this type of work.
Is this true for many volunteers?
Well, about 1 in 5 decide they don't want to go any further.
So once they've got through the interview, is there some training before the volunteers start on the project?
Oh yes, it's quite extensive. We divide it into what we call soft skills and hard skills. So, as part of the hard skills, we'd give volunteers training on managing projects. This is because they need to be able to make sure work gets done on time. We often work to a tight schedule. They also have to maintain a high standard of work, which is not an easy task. Then, of course, they'd need to learn some basic bookkeeping skills, such as keeping records of spending. That's really important, you know. And they have to produce project costings.
All these skills help to make them more organized, I suppose.
That's right. The other part of the training is the soft skills. First, we do cultural sensitivity training. The knowledge they gain from this increases their awareness of local issues. Lots of volunteers don't know much about the countries they're sent to. They also gain an understanding of the effect they have on the local people. Sometimes the volunteers are quite surprised about the effect they have. Foreigners are something of a novelty in many places. Another important skill we hope to develop is the ability to manage people. As part of this, volunteers have to learn how to take the lead. Taking the lead is not that easy. For example, it can be difficult for young people to manage people a lot older than them. Another important aspect they have to learn about managing is how to be tactful. We also put a lot of emphasis on language skills. In some parts of the world, like Africa and China, there is a common language. They need to learn the basics of this common language. But some areas have regional dialects, so they need to get some understanding of these dialects as well. Oh, and I forgot one very important skill. I guess you'd call this a hard skill. They need to learn about tropical medicine. This will involve treating some common diseases like bilharzia, glaucoma, and malaria. They also need to deal with things like snake bites and septic wounds.
Well, Miss Jones, thank you for that. Let's have a short break now, and after that we'll introduce our ex-volunteer, and the audience can ask some questions.
That's the end of part one. You'll now have 5 minutes to...
At this stage of the talk, we'll open up the discussion. May I welcome Kevin Cheung, who has been on the type of projects you'll be going on.
Hello, everybody.
Perhaps someone would like to start by asking him a question. Please give your name when you ask. So, who wants to ask the first one?
I'm Zhou Chen of Sunming College. Is there any special advice you would give to people before they consider volunteering?
Before they volunteer? Well, it seems that many people know nothing about the places where the aid program is active. So I'd advise them to read up about the countries VWO is working in, and do it before they go. I also think that people don't think enough about how they'll cope with the climate. They should consider this really seriously, because some of the countries we're sent to are extremely hot. On a more practical note, although there's a compulsory medical before the training, they should have a thorough dental check before they think about volunteering. Often they'll be working in remote areas, and there may not be a dentist for hundreds of miles.
The lady by the window.
My name's Louise Tam, and I'm here with my daughter, Jenny, who wants to volunteer. Miss Jones, I'd like to ask, is there anything we parents can do to help our children prepare?
Yes, indeed. I think the parents of the volunteers have a responsibility too. There are a number of problems they should anticipate beforehand. For example, they should think carefully about money. One problem is that they often give their children too much at the beginning of the project. It's not a good idea to give volunteers a lot of money, as the areas they're going to are very poor. It'll set them apart from the local people. A good way around this is to pay their children an allowance through a local bank. Another thing parents need to consider is how difficult it is to stay in touch. This could be because phoning may be very expensive. I'd advise that parents get some kind of calling card for the volunteers so that they can always ring home.
The gentleman with the ponytail?
Richard Turpin of the Young Post. My question is for Kevin. What are the biggest hardships that volunteers have to face when living in an undeveloped country?
Volunteers have to deal with many hardships while they are working on these projects. The first of these is culture shock. Poverty is a very depressing thing and can sometimes take you by surprise. Then the food may be strange for them, and they start thinking about what they used to eat at home. In fact, homesickness is another big problem that they face. Many of the volunteers have never been away from home for more than a couple of days, and this is very new to them, as it was to me.
Many of the hardships arise from the fact that volunteers usually live with local families in a village. This may lead to difficulties, but it does have advantages for both the family and the volunteer. The volunteer learns about the local way of life and also picks up a lot of the language. As for the family, they get much-needed extra cash. Unfortunately, in some areas, it's more difficult. Families may have to share what little food they have. Because of this, volunteers may not get enough to eat. And they may find this affects their energy levels too.
Let me just make a note of that. Too little to eat affects energy levels. What do you remember was the most unpleasant thing about where you were, Kevin?
The most unpleasant thing? Well, I worked in a small village in a remote part of Nepal. And the worst thing for me wasn't the food. It was the humidity in the summer. It was so humid that all my clothes went moldy. I had to throw everything away when I left. Also, there was no tap water in the village, so I had to wash in a nearby river. Sometimes it was very muddy.
The lady near the door there, do you have a question?
Yes, Jenny Lim of Yang King Secondary School. I'd like to know, do many volunteers drop out before the project is complete?
Well, there are always some who drop out, but I wouldn't say it was too many. The main reason they drop out is failure to adapt. As Kevin has mentioned, volunteers need to adapt to a range of things. First and foremost, a tough physical environment. For example, there may be different kinds of insects that they have to cope with, like mosquitoes or bed bugs. On another level, they need to be able to adapt to the local religious beliefs. People may be animists or strict Muslims, and there may be rituals that have to be observed. Rituals are an important part of many people's daily life. And for Hong Kong volunteers, they need to adapt to boredom in their free time. Because the country they're in is not wealthy, there are usually no entertainment facilities.
The gentleman in the front row.
Hello, James Toh from Sa Tin. Mr. Zheng, how did you stop yourself from getting bored in your free time? What did you do to occupy yourself?
Well, there really wasn't very much to do in my village. I suppose I went to the movies once in a while. These were videos shown in the village hall. Unfortunately, the movies were usually terrible, either very violent or silly. What else did I do? Oh yes, I took a Walkman along with me. I tried to listen to the radio in the evenings, but the reception was very poor, probably because of the mountains nearby.
Perhaps with the final question, we could try to end on a more positive note. How about the lady just here?
Sally Wu. I'm a student from an international school. Kevin, can I ask you, what aspect of your voluntary work gave you the most satisfaction?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch that. Could you repeat it?
I asked, what aspect of your work satisfied you most?
That's easy to answer. The most satisfying thing for me, on the whole, was gaining the trust of the local people. When I arrived, I was a stranger. But when I left, I felt that they had a lot of respect for me.
And on that note, I think we should bring the question and answer session to an end. Thank you, Kevin, for giving us first-hand information about what it's like working on one of our projects. And I hope what we've said has given you, our possible new recruits, some food for thought. Those who would like to get a better idea of the places where we work may now like to stay for a special video show.
That's the end of the discussion. You'll now have 10 minutes to tidy up your